It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Hi, this is Kyle Bauer. My guest today on the front porch is the former director of the Clay Center Public Utilities Commission, Bill Calloway. He ran it for many, many years, and Clay Center's Public Utilities Commission is unique. It certainly was unique at one time. Bill, is it still unique, or do other towns have a similar public utilities commission?
Clay Center Public Utility Commission is very unique because it was the first public utility commission created and challenged in court.
Now, when did that all happen?
1903 is when the city council decided to do their own electric utilities. Prior to that, the electricity that was fed into the city of Clay Center, limited electricity, was by private company Williams Dam on Hunter's Creek. That started in the late 1800s. And in 1903, the city council says, well, we want to do our own because the company, it was actually called the Kansas Power Company. The Williams family was increasing their rates. Ironically, they were going to go from 12 cents to 17.
Per kilowatt?
Per kilowatt.
Okay, that's similar to where we are. Oh, well, that's retail.
We're 10 to 12
now. Yeah, exactly.
Show me a company in 124 years has kept the same revenue stream.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah. So the city council, they decided they were going to buy their own generator and do their own thing. And you got to realize the lighting at that time was mostly street lights, very few appliances, and one and two light bulbs in a house, so very limited. The city public utility in the cities, they started out with a 50 horsepower 75 kilowatt generator.
It was a 75 kilowatt.
75 kilowatt. Most farmers have that on their
generator. Absolutely.
It was a steam reciprocating engine. It was not a turbine. It was a steam piston-driven engine. And the city started servicing a limited number of customers. At that time, 1903 to approximately 1904, 1905, they created the Clay Center Public Utility Commission. That is a three-man commission that is appointed by the mayor with the city's council approval. After that appointment and that approval, the task of the Public Utility Commission is to acquire energy, resources, fuel, labor, and to provide electric service to the community.
Now, in those days, though, there was no grid. If you didn't produce it in town, it wasn't going to be coming from far away.
They either generated it or it was dark.
So most towns had some sort of a generator in them, a public utility generator, or Clay Center was ahead of its time?
We were kind of ahead of its time. Even today, there's a number of towns that do not have their own generator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when we look at the rural area around here, south of Clay Center had REA before World War II, and North didn't get it till after World War II.
Right.
But that was 40 years later.
Right.
Clay Center had power 40 years before the rural
that's
did.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
So they actually, it was kind of an interesting story. The Williams family and the city council kind of got at odds on who was going to provide the power, and it's kind of an interesting story that they went back and forth, and after a few adult beverages after a council meeting one night, three gentlemen went down there and cut the power poles from the Williams Dam down and cut the service to the city. That didn't go over too good. And that was a portion of the reason they started to go to court. The private company in 1904, 1905, they filed in district court a grievance of the creation of the Public Utility Commission to take it away from a private firm.
Now, I'm thinking that when Williams, they had their electricity being generated by, you said, Huntress Creek.
Yes.
There'd be times of the year there wouldn't be enough water, or it'd be frozen that you couldn't generate power.
The remedy to that was is they built a diversion dam on the Republican River. You can still go down there today. The river's washed around the north end of it, but there's a diversion dam down there that they built in the 1800s. It brought water up behind the new water treatment plant and put water above the Huntress Creek Dam.
That's how that worked. Yeah. I never could
and
understand.
And it also brought water down through the mill race and run a feed mill or grinding mill over there through Utility Park. That used to be a mill race.
Okay.
That furnished power for the Williamson Mill.
And that is now the kiddie pond, right?
Because
you see concrete structure.
That's a portion of the old structure.
Okay.
You can go down to the southwest corner of the new walking trails, and you can see the original diversion dam. You can see the powerhouse. Ironically, in the mid-'80s, I did a little research. I was traveling quite a little bit creating this power pool, and I found the original turbines that were in that powerhouse.
Really?
They're in Oxford, Kansas today.
So the Williams family sold them off at some
point. Yeah, that's a story. When they went to court, they went to district court, they went to court of appeals, they went to the state Supreme Court, and they went to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court decision was in favor of the Public Utility Commission in 1916.
So they fought it for 12 years.
Yeah. In 1916, a private company in Oxford, Kansas, purchased those two turbines and moved them down onto the Arkansas River into a mill. It was actually operating, believe it or not, one of those turbines was operating in 1984.
That's amazing.
And they made an antique restaurant out of it, and a mill and everything.
Uh-huh.
I had a long conversation with the gentleman's son that bought these in 1916. He gave me all the records, all the engineering. I got a lot of artifacts off of that. But they're still down in Oxford, Kansas.
I'll be yeah. darned.
And, of course, after the decision of the Supreme Court, then the commission was legitimate, and they started to improve the services, and they bought more steam turbines. They went to steam turbines then. Between 1910 and 1938-35, when the big flood hit, they expanded the power plant three times. The first turbine they bought was a 500-kilowatt turbine. The next one was a 750-kilowatt turbine and a 1,500-kilowatt turbine.
So there, at this point, there still isn't a grid out there. Any city going to, if you're going to power electricity, you're going to make it yourself.
It's called island power. You're setting in an island. You're not connected.
Okay.
Clay Center actually was connected to the grid in 1966.
You're kidding. Prior to 66, they produced all their own.
They either produced it or the town was dark.
I did not know that.
1966, fact of the matter, I worked for the company that put the tie in. They put a very limited tie in. It was only 1,500 kilowatts, and the reason they put it in was for black start capability in case the power plant went down.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot easier to start up faster if they had a source of outside power. They did not really put that tie in to support the city. It was just to support black start in case we had a lightning storm or something like that.
So those turbines in those days, I mean, like now, your turbines run on diesel or natural gas?
No, these run on steam.
Now, but how? What generated the steam?
Coal to begin with.
Coal?
Yes. And then they switched to natural gas. And if you look on the east, across the street, east of the old power plant, which is on the west side.
Okay.
there's a little green machine sitting there. That is the first steam turbine that was ever in Clay Center. When we tore it out,
it's sitting outside.
It
a person can
outside.
See.
You can drive by, you see it. It's sitting right there. That's the first steam turbine that was ever. Prior to that, it was reciprocating engines. But we put that little 500 out there just for amusement.
Well, right. I mean, it's not going. It's not worth that much to salvage it. So on the coal side, would that coal come in on rail or truck? Because they would use quite a bit of coal.
No, not very much at all.
Really?
They brought it actually into the old power plant in a wheelbarrow and down an elevator and shoveled it in.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Then that facility was flooded drastically in 1935.
Because it was over the hill down where the zoo is?
No, it's a white building on the west side of the 4th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. That is
okay,
the old
but that
power
was
plant.
Flooded.
Yes. We've got a mark in the basement that's about probably 7 foot deep.
But the turbines were down under what
the
you
turbines
see.
Turbines were up above, but the boilers flooded.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what insinuated to build a new power plant in 1941.
So when that flooded then in 35, the town was without power for quite a while. Yeah.
Quite some time. The best I can gather, it must have been out for about 2 weeks or three.
But still, most of the rural areas, and even I assume the Morganvilles and Greens of the world, they didn't have power.
No. I actually came across an easement that the Public Utility Commission acquired in 1926 to build a line to Broughton.
Okay, in 26.
1926.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Broughton would have been about 8 miles, something like
east
that.
Of here.
Yeah, well, we're going to go to a break. We're visiting with Bill Calloway. He's the former director of the Clay Center Public Utilities Commission, and we're talking about the Clay Center Public Utilities history. Join us after the break for more on the Front Porch. Welcome back to On the Front Porch. My guest today is the former director of the Clay Center Public Utilities Commission, Bill Calloway. And we're talking about the history of Clay Center Public Utilities when they used to generate all their own power. And now, as we went to the break, it was about 1926, and they had just gotten the easement to go to Broughton, Kansas, about 6, 7, 8 miles away. Was that fairly easy in those days to get that done?
It appears to be.
Okay.
I don't.
People
were
probably really wanting it.
The easement entailed that they provided service to them on the way. It wasn't free.
Oh, there you go.
They would be able to connect on.
Oh, so you were the lucky guy, too. If they put the line by you, you could get on.
Over the years, the Clay Center Public Utility Commission has acquired. We have about 200 miles of service territory outside the city limits.
Miles of power lines.
Yes, miles of service territory.
Okay.
We go all the way to Greene. We used to provide service to the city of Greene. They changed that a number of years ago. We go 2.5 miles east of Greene.
Huh.
We go all the way down to Broughton, down the Broughton Road service. We go all the way to Idana. And feed a number of customers back and forth. We go north of town quite a ways.
And that was all came down to you were the only guy in town, and they were just tickled to.
Yeah.
And rural electric in this area came through in the 30s and then late in the 40s.
Most of it was in Clay County was in the 40s.
Right.
Late 40s.
So.
So we have a number of Corporation Commission calls them jurisdictional customers.
Okay.
Now, those customers outside of Clay Center are under the jurisdiction of the Kansas Corporation Commission. The customers inside the city limits are not under the corporation.
So you can set the rates and you don't have to go to them.
We don't have to go to them. The only time we have to go to the Corporation Commission is we change a rate on the jurisdictional customers outside the city limits, or a grievance or something like that.
Right.
But inside, the Corporation Commission has no jurisdiction over our actions, our rates, or our policies.
Well, at some point we need to talk about that, but maybe we'll save that for just a little bit later. And right now, let's stay in the city and the history of it. The Clay Center Park, Zoo Park, is, everybody think, not everybody, there's a lot of people think that's part of Clay Center Parks and Recreation, but it's not.
There's days we wished it was.
Yeah, well, I bet all the days are wished it was.
Really. We're very proud of that. Very, very proud of it. We've did a lot of extensive work there. The park started actually in the 30s, and a lot of people think that was a WPA project, which it was not. The WPA was never in the park. We started, what we had was our city water wells were in that area. The east side of the park actually was a city dump at one time.
Okay.
Along 4th Street.
Uh-huh.
And we had water wells down there, and we had wells for cooling, and then the mill race ran through there for other things. So there was actually a committee, and it was created in the city, Beautification Committee. And they started making little trails down there, sidewalks, and that kind of stuff. And actually, that committee made an application for Better Homes and Gardens in 1934. And if you look, there's a monument down there and an award we received in 1934 for the beautification of that park. All those stone structures, all the walls, all the walkways, most all of those were done by utility customers that owed us a light bill.
Uh-huh.
And we have records that an individual or several individuals, they would owe us $2 in a light bill, and we'd say, go down there and work in a park for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
We've got those records. And so the people that couldn't afford to pay for their utility bills worked their bills off creating that park.
And was it mostly done all during the 30s then?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks more or less the same all of my life.
Yeah, most of it was done in the 30s up into World War II.
When did it become a zoo?
Well, the mill race had ducks and geese and, you know.
Just natural ones.
Yes. When I first came here, they'd try to give you a duck for Christmas. And ironically, they started getting a few deer, and people would bring injured deer and stuff in there, and they were with the ducks. And in 1954, the Volunteer Fire Department of Clay Center donated 2 macaque monkeys. And that's when we got the monkeys,
okay.
And we started to expand.
Okay, well, yeah. I was born in 58, and the zoo, until somewhat recently, and we'll maybe have time for that, it looked pretty much the same all of my life.
It was antiquated and needed some repair.
Yeah, well, and
but
it
we
was...
we started with the monkeys and ducks and geese and small animals, and it evolved into something that was enjoyable. That's something else is there's... there's no tax money in that park at all. That is sustained by volunteer contributions and the Public Utility Commission.
And so then when you pay your electric bill, a small portion of it can go toward that or may go to that.
The water bill.
The water bill.
Yes, because we have jurisdictional customers, we can't take anything out of the revenue of the electric for the park.
Okay.
So it's a water bill.
Okay.
And really, it's very minimal.
Well, in recent times, there's been a lot of donations because the state of Kansas or USDA kind of shut you down?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, that's the end of that. And there was a number of people in the community that said, what's it going to take to keep the zoo?
Big time.
And hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yes, it has been. It has been.
And it was, for the most part, all raised through donations. Yeah.
We're very proud of that park and that zoo, and we're very proud to be able to provide it to our customers and the citizens free of charge. Years ago, we expanded into walking trails. Maybe you know Mr. Paul Williams. When we expanded over into the water treatment plant, I needed an easement down that railroad to get a water line, and I went to Paul and I said, we'd sure like to buy an easement, a 20, 30-foot easement, the length of your property. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. But he said, I'll just sell you the whole property for the zoo. He said, I want that zoo to expand. And so Paul very, very reasonably transferred that acreage over to the Commission for Walking Trails.
And that was on what I'll call the east side of the creek, but then later you bought property on the west side of the creek.
We bought the Woller property over there in the last few years, and we've expanded across over in the Woller property.
And that, and for people that walk the trails then, the newest trails are over on the Woller property.
Yeah, and we've got some contributions that we're going to pave the rest of the trails, the walking trails. We're doing a wetland area on the west side of the creek, and all the trees, or most all the trees down there that's in the park, I raised myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they weren't very big when they started, but they're getting nice size now.
I started them out as seedlings.
Oh, really?
I've got about 10 or 12 different varieties that are not normal around here. I start them out at my house as seedlings. I put tree tubes over them, and I raise them 3 to 4 years, and we've got a tree spade that we move them down into the park.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, there's basswood trees down there.
Does it say what kind of tree it is on the tree?
That's in our long-range plans.
Yeah.
We would like to put little plaques. We'd like to put mile markers, you might say, around the trails, and then plaques on the unusual trees.
Do you know how many miles of trail there is now?
It's a little over a mile, 2 miles.
I thought it was in that mile and a half range, something like that. Yeah. And, it's gotten pretty – well, you know what? This is a good time to go to a break. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the Clay Center Public Utilities, how they operate, and give everybody some more history about – CCPU. This is Kyle Bauer with On the Front Porch, and that is Bill Calloway. Welcome back to On the Front Porch. My guest today is Bill Calloway. He was the former director of the Clay Center Public Utilities for many years, and we've been talking about the history of Clay Center Public Utilities when they were the only source of electricity for this part of the state. You know, kind of where we broke, though, Bill, was the 35 flood put the old turbines out of business that were on the west side of the street.
Yeah.
So that forced you into a new era of generators?
Yes. That was actually, they started construction. An engineer's recommendation was to move across the street, get into higher ground. They stayed with steam turbines. They stayed with that type of a power. They started construction on the east side of the street in 1941.
Just before the war, and then the war would have stopped everything.
It was curtailed because of the war. And believe it or not, the Public Utility Commission had to hire civilian guards for that facility during the war. Local individuals, I know a couple of them, that they worked as civilian guards to secure that facility during the war.
Yeah, I'll be darned.
After World War II was over, then they completed the construction of the new plant. And the first turbine was a 1,500-kilowatt Alice Chalmers turbine.
And it ran on?
Steam and natural gas.
Natural gas that fired a boiler that then the steam.
Steam, yeah.
Okay.
The second expansion was a 3,000 kilowatt. That was in the early 50s. In 1962-63, they put a 5,000 kilowatt turbine in there.
And is this still steam?
Yes, still
okay,
steam.
Still steam.
All steam turbines. And they generated them. I'm highly fond of them. That steam turbine just hums, you know. The diesel engine rattles.
Right, yeah. You know. No, it really wouldn't make that much noise, would it?
And in 1959, they put the first diesel engine in. Now, it was a dual fuel. It would burn natural gas or diesel in 1959. They put that in for just station power for the plant if they didn't have electricity. If the plant went down, they could start up with that.
See, that's, I think, a lot of people don't understand. On the steam part, you don't start those up immediately.
No.
And there's still steam or turbine. Well, all coal-fired power plants work that way.
Oh, yeah.
You just can't turn them on in a moment's notice.
You've got to preheat them and all that. You can't start them up. You can't shut them down. And actually, that is the reason why we decommissioned and quit using them.
Right.
They're very affordable in the daytime when you've got load, peak load. 2 o'clock in the morning, they're atrocious what they cost you to run.
Right.
So 59 was the first internal combustion engine. 1968 was the next one. That was a 2,000 opposed piston Fairbanks engine. 1970, 71 in there, they bought a V16 Enterprise.
And how many kW was that?
4,700 kilowatts.
Okay, so it'd be 47,000?
Yes.
Kilowatts.
No,
470.
4,700 kilowatts.
Okay.
Then in the early 90s, late 80s, we bought two Cooper Bessemer V16s. They're 3,500 kilowatts.
And now, when you, I mean, if people are thinking, my gosh, they've got 25 down there. You don't. You sell off or decommission some of them as you put.
We still have the original one in that plant.
Really?
We do not run it.
But you have like 10 different generators in there?
Nine.
Wow.
We bought two of the 3,500 Coopers, and then in 2002, we bought that FM Man, and that's 6.8 megawatts, so 6,800 kilowatts.
The FM Man is that huge one.
That is huge.
I mean, because I remember when they moved that into town. It came from Germany?
Yes, Augsburg, Germany. Got 3,200 gallons of lube oil in it. It's 14.
Yeah, if you're going to, to give somebody an idea, you know, you change oil in your car and it's maybe 4 or 5 quarts. This has 3,200 gallons.
3,200 gallons. And that's another point. And it's 14,000 horsepower. And we never change oil in those units. The only time we change oil in the unit is if we get outside contamination, like sodium from antifreeze and that kind of stuff. And we only have two engines that have antifreeze in them anyway. But we centrifuge that oil 24 hours a day. We heat it and we filter it 24 hours a day. We never change oil.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that trip, as I recall, on that generator, I mean, that was quite a gauntlet. It came ship and barge and truck.
Gary Griffiths and I, Chris, we went to Germany inspected it to release it for shipment, and it was quite a deal. I negotiated with Mann Corporation to commission that engine here in the United States. They normally commission it over there in the factory, and then you go over and release it and all that. Well, I negotiated in the contract I wanted them to commission it here in the United States. Well, that did a couple of things. It gave my employees the experience of watching it and the knowledge of what they gained and everything. We got it tested right here in our facility. We know what to do and all of that. So, very beneficial. Yeah.
So, More or less around Kansas, how many cities have their own power plant? I mean, is that unusual, or are there a lot of them?
Well, they're not a lot of them. Excuse me. There is only three public utility commissions. We are the oldest. McPherson, I believe they started in 1974, something like that, and Kansas City Board of Public Utilities. There's only three public utility commissions in Kansas.
And you were started clear back in the teens.
1903.
Wow.
03 or 04. There's a number of towns that have their own generation. It's getting limited. A lot of people are shutting down. But we are very, very proud to be a generating utility. If you remember the ice storm in, what, 93?
Mm-hmm.
We had a businessman here in Clay Center that was out of electricity in Manhattan for 3 days. And his facility here in Clay Center was out 20 minutes.
Yeah. It was a big deal.
It is. It's a very, very beneficial deal.
Yeah. It's so as we look at the superintendency, there hasn't been very many superintendents over the years.
No, and I can't really tell you all of them. The first one I know about was Frank Myers. And he semi-retired in 1947, and I really don't know when he started, but There was two or three before him. In 1947, a gentleman by the name of Harold Vogtman came to Clay Center, and he was kind of my mentor. He was a very, very dear friend of mine. He's the one that got me to move here in Clay Center. After Harold Vogtman, there was Herb Marshall, John Ledoux, D.D. Durking, myself, and Scott Glaze.
Yeah. Well, that's a big job. I mean, it's not just power generation and power lines. There's a lot of regulations lot of paperwork.
They take the fun out of it.
Well, and that's probably a reason that a lot of cities have gotten out of the business over the years is because of that.
That and labor. Trying to hire people.
Oh, right, because you've got to have someone qualified to do those kinds of jobs.
Find labor, work shift work, and that kind of stuff.
How many employees does public utilities have?
We run about 34 to 38.
Yeah, that's a good sized employer in town, and good higher paid jobs.
Yes. A lot of people don't realize, the Public Utility Commission, we have about $6.5 million water budget. We've got a $12.3 million electric budget. We actually run about $19 million in our budget
on your annual year.
And
this thing that's kind of strange for you all is that we have a great summer here that we're all happy. It rains. It's nice and cool, and we're like, wow, this is a great summer. And for you guys, I mean, it is. It just sucks your budget way, way, way down.
Well, and we have to budget for that. We don't know what the summer load in the electric side or water is going to do. So we have to budget to purchase fuel, purchase power, and so forth.
Yeah, and it's a lot of money. And so, again, when we have a summer that our electric bill is half of the year before, that means your revenues were half.
Yes.
And you still had to pay those 35 employees.
We have to, same expenses. Yes.
Well, we're visiting with Bill Calloway. He was a longtime director of the Clay Center Public Utilities. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about their water treatment plant that's fairly, I'll say, on the cutting edge for most cities in the state of Kansas. Welcome back to the fourth segment of On the Front Porch. We're visiting with Bill Calloway about Clay Center Public Utilities. Bill, you mentioned slightly about a power pool, and we've talked about the evolution of Clay Center doing all their own electricity and then joining the greater grid. You were one of the founders of the Kansas Power Pool?
Yes, yes. In about 2008, we were notified we were going to have to belong to SPP, Southwest Power Pool, to get transmission, to get energy in here. We did a study and found out it was not economically feasible for us to do it by ourselves. So two other utility directors and I, we started talking and we decided, well, we're going to do a power pool. We did. We created the Kansas Power Pool. It was a lot of legal deals, a lot of entities. We started out with 43 members. Today we have 24 members taking service. They are all municipal electric. Clay Center buys no energy outside of the power pool. The Kansas Power Pool has 16 resources of energy all over the United States that we bring in here. We own wind. We own hydro. It's very diversified. That is one of the biggest reasons I signed a contract with TransCanada Pipeline Corporation, is because we belong to that power pool, and we had a WAPA, Western Area Power Administration resource. They wanted that power.
And because it's diverse and it's over a lot of different areas.
And it isn't affected with weather and that kind of stuff. That was TransCanada's really favorite.
So here at the radio station, I pay three different power bills every month, and two are electric cooperatives and one is yourself. All of those might take power from a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And without getting into making you speak about them, but the point is your power company has its source of electricity, which may be completely different than the guy across the street.
You're right. And in the Kansas Power Pool, we pancake it. We use the lowest charge first, the cheapest first. Very huge, you know. We buy very reasonable power. Like TransCanada, very, very large customer. We were able to handle that through this power pool. Yeah.
So I don't think people understand, and we can't get into how the grid works, but you, from time to time, are asked to, because the grid needs you, you fire up down here, but they usually tell you about a day ahead of time?
Energy prices change every 15 minutes, and depending on where you're bringing it in, your transmission and all of that. We have about 21-22 megawatts of generation down here, and they pay us capacity charge every month for that capacity, for the ability to call upon it to run. When they call us to run, it's different prices. They charge us or pay us so much to start up, so much fuels and all that. Very, very profitable. Very profitable.
But very complicated.
Very complicated.
Yeah.
When you put the government in anything, it gets complicated.
Well, but you, and where you have a number of communities all over the state and a number of different sources, and the grid has to stay at the proper voltage, so you've got to anticipate by temperatures and wind and all the different things.
Wind makes a huge difference today. We actually pay for 9 ancillary services. Ancillary services: voltage control, frequency control, reliability, and all of that. Yeah.
Well, we need to get to the water treatment plant because when Clay Center Public Utilities presented that, we knew the water bills were going to go up. But what was the reason for making that, and tell us about what the water treatment plant is like?
Well, to start with, never had any idea of building a water treatment plant like that. I was actually giving the commission a presentation on chlorine retention time. We were going to have to spend about $3.5 million to get all the water supply in one place and hold chlorine on it for 40 minutes before we put it in a distribution system.
Because before that, you had wells all over town.
Pumped here and pumped it directly in, and a guy across the street drank it.
Right.
And I was giving him a presentation, and Mr. Button, he says, well, Bill, if we're going to spend $3.5 million, can we improve the quality of the water? And I said, well, we can look at that. So we spent $200,000-$300,000, and we did a study, and we came up with the study that we, an RO, reverse osmosis water treatment plant, was the most feasible and best way for us.
Well, and for those who didn't know about Clay Center's water before that, Clay Center's water was very, very hard. I mean, quality-wise, it might have been safe, but it was not very pleasant.
It was safe
water
to drink. Very high in iron and manganese, very high in lime and that stuff. We went from some of the worst water in the state of Kansas to the best.
Yeah. And then you had water regs changing at that time, too, by EPA or whoever, you could kind of see this handwriting on the wall that they were going to get more and more stringent over the next decades.
And this took care of the future project. So we went into a contract and to develop a water treatment plant. We developed a 3 million gallon a day reverse osmosis. We also, before we go into the membranes, we do green sand, which takes out all the iron and manganese and that. It's cheaper. We've got a 1 million gallon water tank out there that we do the chlorine retention time. We do have 3 million gallon capacity a day. We don't use that much. Ironically, years and years ago, we pumped 3 million gallons of water a day. Today, we pump 200,000, 300,000.
And the population's similar.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, one reason is everybody got rid of their water softeners. So every night, the water softener
wasn't purging all that
out. We're not running the steam plant. It takes a lot of water.
Right.
So we have really conserved water in Clay Center, and it's been very successful.
Well, since you got the plant online, though, you've solved some problems for other water providers in the area as well.
Yes. Yes, we wholesale water to the city of Morganville. We've got a 6-inch line runs all the way to Morganville. From Morganville, we got a booster station up there in the ball field, and then we service Rural Water 1 in Clay County, which is most of the northern portion of the county. So we service water virtually close to Washington County.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the planning stages now. We're going to go east of town to a couple of customers that are requesting mm-hmm. it. So it's been very, very... We changed life in Clay Center with that water.
You really did. I mean, and in all candor, my water bill probably went up more than double.
Oh.
More than double. But I had windows when I moved into my house that had been etched from the water that was spraying on them from the sprinklers, and they had to be replaced because the water would just basically...
I paid a water softener company $53 a month to rent a softener, and I hauled the salt to the basement, and my water bill now is about $52.
Yeah, for just a home. I think that's about what it is here at the radio station, and you never have any issues with any corrosion on anything. So it was quite a move forward, that's for sure.
Another big deal is we control the pH of the water now. We raised the pH so it's not near as corrosive as it was.
Oh, is that why it isn't as corrosive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and you still have significant capacity to, town needs it?
And if the town was to grow, one beneficial, we have 002 and 008 water rights. We have old water rights numbers. And we have very large water.
You have number 2 and number 8?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
and they're good size.
Oh, big. We actually converted half of our industrial right to public water supply when we built that. So we've got a tremendous amount of water rights. Now, Whether the water's there or not is another story.
Well, but you're in the Republican alluvial.
I thought that too until last year, and we actually had static water drawdown that we were pumping some air.
Well, yes, but the river had hardly run a bunch above base flow for about 2 years. Yeah, exactly right. So it had. It's a unique situation that Clay Center has with the public utilities, and I don't think a lot of people understand the community investment and the community value that it brings.
Well, we pay tax on everything we use. We pay sales tax on everything we use. Our customers pay a subsidy fee to the city. In general fund, if you notice on your bill, I was very with the first and only city manager we ever had. She wanted money out of our revenues, and we established a subsidy fee, and I was very adamant that it was visible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right on our bills. There's a subsidy fee for water and a subsidy fee for electric, and it goes to the general fund of the city.
So not only does government taxes not go toward you, you are paying toward the city government.
Correct. Our customers are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very good. Well, that's Bill Calloway. He was a longtime superintendent of the Clay Center Public Utilities. And thank you, Bill, for explaining it all to us.